love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam, hands-free, from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dynasty Roundtable Podcast. Tonight, it's going to be a little weird for me because I'm going to be taking a back seat. Matt Babich is going to be steering the show. He is going to be telling you his 16 players that he is targeting in Dynasty startups. I suppose this could extend to Dynasty trades.
Absolutely.
Throughout the summer as well. I mean, this is pretty much an all-encompassing episode. These are 16 players, and we're going every single round of a startup. So he's picking every round using Dynasty Data Labs ADP tool. So Matt Babich, how are you feeling? How did this exercise go for you? And more importantly, what's going on tonight?
I feel great. This was a very fun exercise. You hit me with the idea for the episodes, hint, hint. And I loved it. Went into Dynasty Data Lab for their ADP to review that. Free ad, great website, check it out. And it was a little tough for a couple of the rounds, but for the most part, I actually found myself making these choices pretty quickly and saying to myself all the while, I'm very, very interested to see where Seth and I would differ on this. And we will eventually get to those answers. I also thought, by the time I got to the late rounds, almost every time I would look and say running back, running back, running back, running back, as I went down the list. That wasn't really the case. I actually found myself liking a lot of receivers in these late rounds, given only the choice of one player within that round of ADP, but still kind of looked at what my team would be in this, you know, my perfect draft, so to speak, based on ADP and ADP only. Ended up being pretty even. Across the talent, the different positions in a super flex draft, I would be super stoked with this start, and I'm excited to break it down.
Awesome. Awesome. I am excited to get going. So without further ado, the podcast audience is not going to see this, but we do have some graphics here. Your first player is Jalen Hurts. So why don't you talk to me about why you think Jalen Hurts is a value in round one.
Absolutely. So hard to see in this view, but his jersey's right behind me. I've been a big proponent of Jalen Hurts ever since he got drafted into the league, just his archetype. I wasn't even in on the talent, but I said to myself, if he's a starting quarterback, it's going to be a very, very, very fun player to be in on for fantasy football. And that's exactly what's happened. Quarterback 6-2-1-6 in fantasy points per game over the last four seasons. Just 27 years old. Has one of the most stable rushing floors in the entire NFL in terms of quarterbacks. And you get him outside of that top tier of Allen, Daniels, and Jackson. And you get him at the halfway point. I swear he was 7 when I looked earlier today. He's 6 right now, so maybe I was wrong. But you basically get him at the back half of the first round, and there's a very strong argument to be made, and I'll make it, that if I was guaranteed Jalen Hurts at the 1-6 in any given dynasty draft, super flex, I would take that position, and I would lock it in. every single time. Because I think getting that value and getting an increased value in terms of wins over replacement with certain prospects on the other side of that, getting a better player in the second round, I think that's an incredible combination. And we saw on our mock draft, Seth, last time, you were at, what, 8 and managed to get Hurts? And so I don't think that's happening in many leagues. And what a start that ended up being. So being able to get Hurts in the back half of the first round at any point, 6 or onward, is such an incredible blessing and one that I would just love to get blessed with. I would kill to get 1-6 Jalen Hurts in a super flex startup, and I don't think you're going to be able to do it most times. Clearly you can, because that's ADP, but it doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, I'm really trying to rack my brain as to why or how this makes any sense. I get it. Joe Burrow threw a million passes last year. Ja'Marr Chase is amazing. But there's no world where you could really, and I've been racking my brain ever since you put him on the show sheet. Like, what is the other side of the argument? I mean, because I feel like 8 times out of 10, you know, if we run the simulation of the season, Jalen Hurts is going to score more fantasy points than Joe Burrow 8 times out of 10 because of the rushing upside that he has. And I don't think that's too controversial of a statement to make. And then you think, well, it's not age, because Jalen Hurts is 26 years old. He's in a great offense. Now you can say, okay, well, Kellen Moore is now the head coach of the Saints. They have, I hope I'm saying this right, Kevin Patullo is their offensive coordinator. They just promoted him. He was the passing game coordinator last year. He's been with the organization since 2021, but he has a bevy of experience going all the way back to 2007, when he was the quality control coach, offensive assistant for the Chiefs. That's when he broke into the NFL. So I trust the Eagles. The Eagles are a smart organization to hire a competent, you know, not a Shane Waldron type offensive coordinator. So, and you look at this Eagles offense and they have basically all the same characters, right? The defense lost pieces, but they still have AJ Brown, despite all the drama that went down last year. They still have Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert amid trade rumors, and of course, Saquon Barkley. So what's not to like here? I don't really know. So I'm in full agreement with your round one pick, and I'm kind of astounded that he is where he is at player 6 overall. I think he should be for sure locked in the top 4. Potentially you could talk me, maybe you could talk me over him over Lamar, maybe, but for sure at 4 is where I would have him. Now let's move to round 2, and you put up Ladd McConkey. So tell me why you chose Ladd McConkey in round 2. Oh, you're muted.
So
we did it.
I can unmute myself quick enough now, I think, to where. But oh my gosh, I knew I was going to do that. At least I didn't do it to lead off the segment. Well, Ladd
7
McConkey.
Minutes in, over under. I don't know what the over under was, but it was 7 minutes.
It was probably going to be about 7 minutes. But Ladd McConkey. Now we're getting him based on Dynasty Data Lab ADP. Want to check it to make sure it is still there. And yep, back end of the second round. He's actually fallen since today, which is kind of crazy to me. He's technically 3rd round now on Dynasty Data Lab. So all of this is as of this morning. I did not realize Dynasty ADP changed that quickly. But I'm very happy with taking Ladd McConkey at the back end of the second round, given who's available, especially at the beginning of the 3rd. You're getting a player who is 24 years old, super young, no issue with age curves, especially given his role in the slot. He's talked a lot this offseason about modeling his game after guys like Julian Edelman and Tyler Lockett, guys who learned, when they can fall and avoid hits versus when they need to grind out that extra yardage for a first down or a big play, get into the end zone. So he's already taking the right steps into preserving his health for a guy who's already a little undersized. But we saw from his gameplay last year, that's not going to matter. He can win on the inside. He can win on the outside. He had an incredible season for really having no one else in the Chargers receiving core. I mean, Quentin Johnston was at least better than his rookie season, but nothing special. They're running Will Disley and Hayden Hurst out of the tight end. They're rolling out Josh Palmer and Jalen Guyton, maybe even still. I feel like there's somebody who played a bigger role that I left out. But the point is, there's not a lot there. And Ladd McConkey was making it work, especially towards the back half of the season. There's a stark difference really on week 11 onward in what he was doing on the field. He was wide receiver, I think 11 in fantasy points per game from week 11 onward. So that's the type, it's basically right around kind of where his ADP is right now. And you're looking at a guy, Nico Collins, in receiver, and not, earlier in ADP, where Collins's issue is he's never hit that target threshold, that elite target threshold that you need to be, a top five receiver in fantasy points per game, or even that wide receiver one season overall. Much like CeeDee Lamb and how he operated in the slot, getting a crap ton of targets in Dallas, that's the type of role that Ladd McConkey is beginning to take on in Los Angeles. The big question is, what's the pass volume going to be like? So obviously the Chargers improved on the receiving core. They have Trey Harris. They have Mike Williams. I think that's good for them because Ladd is still clearly the man there. He is obviously the man in that offense. And with an improved offense in the running game as well, with Marion Hampton and Najee Harris, improved defense, they're in the AFC West with an improved Raiders team. There's going to be some chances for shootouts. I think this offense is going to be more high power than we're used to. Greg Roman gets a lot of crap for being run heavy, but at the end of the day, those Baltimore offenses were high volume offenses. And so maybe their offense doesn't get quite to that wide receiver one overall yet, but top five, top three, I think is well within reach given what his target share is going to be in this offense in year two, freed up to do so much more around the field. And you look at some of his metrics from last year in terms of his win rate versus man was 7th, according to Player Profiler. I'm sure it ranks very highly in reception perception as well, although I haven't seen it. His contested catch percentage was 5th among receivers. So being undersized and that not mattering is a big deal. Physicality is not going to interrupt him. He was 8th in yards per team pass attempt, 6th in formation adjusted yards per route run, 7th in normal yards per route run. You look all over the map here, and there was so much efficiency, so many things to love from a wide receiver perspective, but I still don't think his name carries that cachet yet. And I think there's still an opportunity to go up because look at him. Look at his face, and look at his height, and look at his weight. And look what he did in college. He didn't do much in college at Georgia. And so people are still rolling with this preconceived notion, and people aren't ready for how elite Ladd McConkey actually is.
So the Chargers this offseason, they take Trey Harris in round 2, but you would think that that's more of a Quentin Johnston potential replacement. They bring back Mike Williams, again, another outside receiver. None of this really affects Ladd McConkey's usage in the slot. And the Chargers, they don't pass the ball as much. I mean, Herbert had just over 500 pass attempts last year. They could easily crank that up a little bit if they wanted to, but Greg Roman's probably not going to do that. But I think the efficiency is going to be there with Ladd McConkey because he's going to be in the slot. So I really like this call. And the wide receivers that he's right next to are fascinating to me because he is ranked below. He's ranked below Drake London. He's being drafted below Drake London, and Marvin Harrison is right one spot ahead of him. And I find that so fascinating because on paper, you look at Marvin and just looking at them, you said it, like the physical appearance of both of those guys, especially this offseason with Marvin Harrison Jr. You would think, oh, there's much more upside with Marvin Harrison Jr., but nothing's changed in Arizona. The quarterback's the same. The offensive coordinator's the same. And you look at what Ladd McConkey was doing at towards the back half of the season, it was exactly what you would want a wide receiver, a young wide receiver, to do in for your dynasty team. I mean, in week 17, championship week, almost 30 points against New England, 29.4, and did not have a less than double digits. Week 10, he had 7.2 fantasy points, but after that, it was all double digit performances. And I don't know how that doesn't carry over to this season. So I really like this call. And the best part is, I think, Dynasty Data Lab is telling us that these players are being drafted back to back. I think the perception is Marvin Harrison is slightly more valuable. So I think you can get something on top of Ladd McConkey in exchange for a Marvin Harrison or a Drake London if you wanted to slightly tear down a little bit. And I don't think you lose that much production. In fact, I agree with you. I think Ladd McConkey is still somehow underrated. So I like that call quite a bit. Now we move on to this might be polarizing for some people, but this is Breece Hall.
I do.
So Breece Hall is being drafted. Let's see.
I need to quick apologize to you and the group because I had one assignment, and that was to do. I was to select 16 players, one from each round, and I screwed up my view on the Dynasty Data Lab. I tried to do this in like the 15 minutes I had before when I got to work, when no one was there, and I got to just eat breakfast and be alone. Yes, that's how early I get into the office. And I messed up the view. I guess I didn't include rookies in it. And so all of the ADPs that I was selecting from were off. So that's why McConkey is a third round pick. That's why Breece Hall is at the 401.
It's still good.
Definitely going to be some wonkiness to some of this. So I do apologize. I think the point all stands. The rounds are going to be a little wonky, but I still love these players at their actual ADPs.
I think the exercise is still the same, or the points are still the same. Like, these are players you can target, maybe not in round three, maybe a round later, maybe even later than that for Breece Hall, because we did a dynasty startup. This is another player that I was able to get in round five, and I think a lot of what the hate that Breece Hall is getting right now is based on a few quotes from the coaches. And to be honest with you, Matt, I don't know why the coaches would come out and say, especially if you're coming in to an organization like the New York Jets, why would you commit to anybody? Why would you come in and say, oh yeah, Breece Hall is going to take 70% of the snaps. Oh yeah, like Justin Fields is our future quarterback. Like, why would you say these things if your goal is to try to change the culture? A staple of a culture changer like Aaron Glenn is, yep, everybody's going to have to earn their reps, even Breece Hall. But I still believe, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, that Breece Hall is clearly the best running back on this roster. It's not close. And I'm not too worried about the pass catching opportunity either, because Justin Fields actually dumps the ball off to running backs more than you might think. So go ahead. Tell me why Breece Hall's a value in the fourth round or late third round of a startup, because I love this selection.
So I'll start with a preemptive retraction of what you'll say to end the episode. I actually, in this instance, in this rare instance, I care about Aaron Rodgers and what he has to say. Because according to Mark Schlereth, Rodgers went on a very long rant about the Jets running game last year. So here's a quote from the full article on CBSSports.com. quote, one thing Aaron and I had a conversation about was when he was with the Jets and how abysmal the run game was and how schematically it made no sense. I brought up the conversation, I started the conversation, and then Aaron went on about a 25-minute diatribe on their run game. I was watching the Jets last year. It was the worst schematic run game I've ever watched in the NFL. End quote from Mark Schlereth. So we have not only Aaron Rodgers, who was beyond pissed about how the run game made no sense. We have fans and analysts like Nate Tice, I believe, commented on it. Don't quote me on that. On Twitter, talking about how they, you know, started funneling him up in the middle, you know, through the middle, and, you know, getting him stuffed into the offensive line. You know, he doesn't have as good a vision up the middle than he does on the outside zone runs. And they were basically taking Breece Hall's weakness and making him go through that 80% of his carries. And so, yeah, it didn't work for the offensive line, for the receiver, for their whole offense. Nothing about it made sense. And so we look back, let's just call that year, you know, a scratch. And even then, he was 10th in total weighted opportunities amongst running backs, 3rd in targets, 1st in route participation and routes run amongst running backs, still was 10th in yards created, 14th in yards created per touch. There was the true yards per carry weren't there, but that's schematically the run game. He was not set up to succeed there. He was 10th amongst running backs in stuffed runs. But you go back to 2023 and the efficiency metrics spike back up. You know, we see the ability for these breakaway runs. Like, anyone with eyes watches Breece Hall and was like, yeah, that guy's talented. The hangup is that for some reason, this previous coaching staff who's no longer there didn't like him anymore. And since he, you know, a contract's coming up and all these things, it's time to panic on Breece Hall. But the fact is, he's a starting running back who's under the age apex by years. The Jets are going to re-sign Breece Hall. I'm very confident about that. They're going to do what the Giants did. In terms of they might franchise tag him. But for a while, the Giants were like, Saquon's the only thing we got. We have to keep him around. And they're going to do that same type of thing with Breece Hall. I wouldn't be shocked if he was franchise tagged when the time comes. But Seth, you sent me a tweet from Derek Brown. Justin Fields over the last 4 years, rank in checkdown percentage, minimum 150 dropbacks per fantasy points. 2nd highest, 5th highest, then 31st, then 11th highest. So again, outside of Garrett Wilson, who's all there, I think things are going to go very well for Breece Hall. Redraft, dynasty, I'm buying the dip everywhere I can.
Yeah, and I think this is a tenet of dynasty that if you know what you're doing and you're willing to take a risk, you can cash in on some serious value. And I think we're entering in this zone with Breece Hall. I mean, over the past 2 seasons, Breece Hall has been, you know, in 2023, top 6 running back. That led him to be hyped up in 2024, and he slightly disappointed people. But the upside and the profile still remain the same, and despite what was a bad situation last year. Now, the situation, I mean, I think Justin Fields is an upgrade. I'm not a huge fan of him as an NFL quarterback, but I think he can make things happen and move the ball for the offense enough to help Breece Hall. And then you look at what else is there, Matt, in the offense outside of Garrett Wilson. I mean, their starting slot wide receiver as of right now is Alan Lazard. I'm looking at our lads right now. Josh Reynolds is projected to be the outside wide receiver. They have Malachi Corley, Tyler Johnson. I mean, I guess they drafted Mason Taylor in the 2nd round, but he'll be a rookie tight end. You see what I'm saying here? This team is going to be very run heavy. They almost have to be. And that would mean that Breece Hall is going to have a significant workload, not just in the running game, but in the passing game too. So, for a running back that's still just 24 years old, 2 years now removed from the torn ACL, and he's playing just fine, I'm willing to take a risk on Breece Hall and that he's going to return value even at his in redraft and dynasty, especially in the fourth round. I mean, that's fantastic value. We'll move to your next player. We won't put a round on these since the ADP is messed up. Your next player is Brock Purdy. So tell me about Brock Purdy.
So Brock Purdy, a name we've been talking about a lot on this podcast lately, another quarterback who went well past ADP in our mock draft and was an insane value at where he was selected at, in my opinion, because you look at his past production as being a starter full time in the league, 6th and 10th among quarterbacks in fantasy points per game. He's tied to Kyle Shanahan till at least 2028, likely beyond that unless he completely implodes. His contract is out until 2030, but surprisingly, they could actually save a lot of money in 2028 by letting go of that contract. So actually a rather team-friendly deal, as long as some of these numbers from SpoTrack are right. But based on the current play, there's no doubt in my mind he's seeing this entire contract if this keeps up, because we really don't even feel like we've hit like Brock Purdy's biggest potential. He's a game manager plus, and his ceiling is limited, but he's also going into his third year as a full-time starter. And last season, we had Debo in and out of the lineup. We had Ayuk in and out of the lineup. We had Pearsall in and out of the lineup and being accustomed, you know, getting up to speed in terms of the NFL. And we had McCaffrey out of the lineup for a long period of time. And still, he delivered. 10th, you know, slight downtick from the night before, or from the year before, but 8th in fantasy points per dropback. So obviously more dropbacks are expected when this offense is better next year. 3rd in player profilers catchable pass rate, 6th in QBR, 3rd in pressured completion percentage. He is, gosh, is this fair to say? Is he the reincarnation of Alex Smith? Athletically, nothing impressive. He can run and get out there if he needs to. Alex Smith had a better arm, I would say. But just a guy who, Alex Smith was like the former number one pick, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's taking over Aaron Rodgers. He was still a game manager. Just because he was a more coveted prospect doesn't change the fact that Alex Smith was a game manager. That is going to piss people off, actually. There's definitely going to be at least one person that comments to that. Yeah. Back to Purdy. This offense is going to get healthier next year. We expect Christian McCaffrey back. Brandon Ayuk is recovering, but is expected to be back at some point. And we have Ricky Pearsall back in, you know, healthy, getting a full offseason this time. There's going to be Jennings. And there's a lot more hope for this offense longer term throughout the year. And really all this offense has to do is take a tiny step forward, and he's back into being a top five consideration, going very late in drafts, considering a super flex ADP.
You nailed it. Brock Purdy is one of my favorite values. And I would argue based on film, I think Brock Purdy is a little bit more athletic than you give him credit for, but I will accept the game manager.
You're not designing runs for Brock Purdy very often.
No, you're right. But there's so much value in this tier of quarterback for me. So Brock Purdy, in my opinion, is one of the more underrated guys out there, because let's face it, Matt, he has the stench still somehow of being Mr. Irrelevant. I think that matters to some people.
Absolutely.
Any other quarterback, if a quarterback taken in the first round got the contract that Brock Purdy just got with 4 or 5 guaranteed years with Shanahan, you think that they'd be going in the late fourth round, fifth round of a dynasty startup super flex? Hell no.
They'd be next to Jordan Love in ADP.
Yes. They'd be a significantly higher. I would venture to say round three minimum. But hey, if you want a guaranteed 4 to 5 years with Kyle Shanahan, just go draft Brock Purdy. Another fantastic redraft option too, I think. Let's move to your fifth player, and that would be Kenneth Walker. And this is another one I'm going to disagree with you at some point, but this is another one I love. So talk to me about Kenneth Walker.
Man, Kenneth Walker is just a beast. If Saquon Barkley would have rolled over a guy, landed on his feet, like literally somersault, and he initiated the somersault, Kenneth Walker, caught in a bind, says, you know what I'll do? I'll somersault over this guy. And he lands it, gets back up, and continues to run. If Saquon Barkley would have done that, news outlets, ESPN, they would have had posters on it. It would have been recreated for the cover of Madden, but it was Kenneth Walker in Seattle, so no one cared, except for the diehard football fans. But I see that play all the time. I go and watch it back because it's one of my favorite things, and it just exhibits the lightning in a bottle that Kenneth Walker is, and he's far too low. He has these injury concerns that are weighing his value down, in my opinion. 15 games, 11 games over 3 years. So he has had a tough time, especially with his groin, and I believe maybe an ankle as well, or ankle oblique kind of lower leg injury that continue to pop up. He's young in his career. He's 24 years old. He's learning. He's going to learn how to absorb these hits, get better at that, because he knows it's his money. Right. If he doesn't get better at that, if he can't figure out how to get healthier and stay healthier, his money's on the line. So he has an incentive to figure that piece out. Second, 11 games is really the only season that was totally plagued with injury. 15 games for a guy getting 250 touches is pretty good. You just want to hope that those two games that they're being out aren't during the playoffs and you're fine. Nine touchdowns, eight touchdowns. We know he can get to the end zone, and it's the Kubiak effect for me. If he was in these same old offenses that weren't going to be high powered and weren't going to be run centric and Charbonnet would get involved, I would be potentially taking a step back. But Kubiak at the helm, especially with how he just treated Kamara, and he gets a very, I'm not going to say similar talent, but similar potential in terms of an elite workhorse back that you can really mold your offense out of. Kenneth Walker fits that, and there's so much excitement in Seattle. All Sam Darnold has to do is just not be a pumpkin. Just make this offense three quarters as good as Minnesota's offense was last season, and Kenneth Walker could have a top five, top three, top one season next year. I said it.
Wow, that's bold, but I like it.
It's bold, yeah, but he's getting top five opportunities, it's in the cards. It's in play.
I love that you brought up Clint Kubiak, because I'm diving deep into the play callers for each team, and there's going to be some data that I'm going to put out on Twitter about it, and I'm going to make some videos about it, and I'm going to see if I can. Because the guy with the play sheet ultimately is in control. And one of the things that we bitch and moan about, and rightly so sometimes in fantasy football, is, oh my God, this player's better. Why aren't they getting more opportunities? And I think to really study the play caller could answer some questions. And if Clint Kubiak, the two times he's been an offensive coordinator, albeit he's had Alvin Kamara in 2024 and Dalvin Cook in 2021, both of those guys got over a 70% opportunity share. So, and you look at what Kenneth Walker did last year and the increased usage that he had, albeit in 11 games. And yeah, the biggest argument against this is going to be the injury proneness in quotation marks. And to me, I don't really consider, he missed two games in the previous 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't consider that injury prone. I consider that one major injury. or major, it wasn't even a major injury. It was just three separate injuries last year that he missed, you know, a couple games here, a couple games there, and it added up to six games. So a 24-year-old running back with a great profile and in a good situation. The Seahawks offensive line was horrible last year. It should be better this year. And now you have Clint Kubiak calling the plays, who we know likes to feature one running back. Feels like a good bet to make, in my opinion. So I like that call quite a bit. This next player, we're not going to disagree with this one either. It's Jaylen Waddle. So tell me why Jaylen Waddle is one of your preferred targets somewhere in the sixth or seventh round of startups.
Another friend of the program, Jaylen Waddle. I said it last time when we were on our mock, and during that mock, I had a Dolphin stack of, Jaylen Waddle and Jonnu Smith and Tua Tagovailoa. And what I coined is that Waddle really has only had one bad season. And I believe his value dip is a culmination of a little bit of a down year in 2023 when he had only four touchdowns and played just 14 games, and a little bit of a backseat to Tyreek Hill, a little less efficient, only 1,000 yards. So we had a slight downtick, nothing you'd normally be worried about. And the Waddle people weren't worried. And then 2024 happened, and similar to Kenneth Walker, how he was kind of in and out, but you can see from his play that he wasn't playing healthy, really. He was really just trying to get out there. He looked hobbled at multiple points throughout the year. Only had two touchdowns. I mean, a career low in everything. So we're basically looking at 1 year, and people are looking at this guy who still hasn't hit his age apex, is in an offense that not only fantasy consensus, but Vegas also seems to agree is going to be an offense that puts up a lot of yards and a lot of points, just like they have every year under Mike McDaniel. Tyreek Hill is a year older. We saw him in action not be able to be his true elite self last year. He's another year older, 31. Am I correct in that? Is he older now?
I think he's 31 years old. Yeah,
I believe so as well. And we're already here. I don't believe Jonnu Smith's going to be traded, but the fact that it was kind of put out there in the offseason, again, I highly doubt it, but Jaylen Waddle is probably, believe it or not, one of the most consistent pieces from a front office perspective in Miami right now. You have 31-year-old Tyreek Hill, who I guarantee you is going to have a run-in with a police officer between now and September. and Jonnu Smith, who they aren't currently giving a contract extension offer to. There was a trade rumor that floated around there. He's also, you know, getting close to 30. I think he's 28, 29. I can't remember. And then there's Jaylen Waddle, 26, and their most consistent piece right now. And why don't they lean into that next year? Especially if defenses aren't as easily beaten by Tyreek Hill. You're going to have to get a little bit more creative. You're not going to want to force feed Jonnu 13 targets all 3 yards away from the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage like they did a lot last year. You're going to want to use Jaylen Waddle, somebody who can maneuver that middle of the field, also keep defenses honest and go deep. So Jaylen Waddle is in for a massive correction, and the haters are going to be sorry.
Yeah, last season was the only season where Jaylen Waddle saw less than 100 targets. It was really a bizarre season for him, and I like this as a buy because what happens if Tyreek Hill doesn't have a good season or gets injured or something happens? They don't have much outside of Jaylen Waddle and potentially not even Jonnu Smith because of the trade rumors. We'll see about that. But let's pick up the pace here. Because this next player I like too, I swear we're going to disagree at some point. But George Pickens with the Cowboys now. Talk to me about why you like George Pickens in round 7, going at the back end of round 7 in Dynasty Startups right now.
The good thing is I think I can get through at least 10 people before we disagree. Maybe you actually might disagree on the very next person, but I think maybe I can get through 10. George Pickens, member of the Dallas Cowboys. I was so happy, not just because my fiance is a huge Cowboys fan. And I live out here in Texas and I do like George Pickens. I think he's a goofball. I think he's funny, but he's kind of freed, you know, he gets to be in Dallas. And I really think there's a shift in terms of how fantasy players view situations with wide receivers, because I think general consensus even is that George Pickens as the number two in Dallas is much better than George Pickens as the number one in Pittsburgh right now. Not just because of the team play, but because of the role that George Pickens is best fit in and where and considering his limitations. So 2023, 22% target share, 33rd amongst wide receivers, and a 26.5% target share, 14th amongst wide receivers in 2024. So we see his ability to command, you know, that 20 to 23% of the targets there in Dallas, potentially more depending on how consolidated it is, but that's probably a rough estimate or a good estimate. And he has that key element of being the burner and being the boundary guy. It's going to free up CeeDee Lamb, and naturally, defenses are going to be more drawn to CeeDee Lamb, which is going to free up George Pickens. So George is going to have more room to work with. His poor separation score isn't going to be such a big deal anymore because he's going to have an easier time getting open. And what was his biggest hindrance in terms of fantasy scoring last year? QB play and getting open. Improve the quarterback play. Improve the separation. He could close in on that 16.7 expected fantasy points per game from last year as opposed to his 11.7 that he actually put out. So the value is corrected, rightfully so, but I still think that there's a lot of upside here at age 24 for George Pickens in this offense.
It's going to be interesting because I did some digging into Brian Schottenheimer, who's going to be calling plays as the head coach. And Mike McCarthy was calling plays the last two seasons, even though he was the offensive coordinator, and they passed the ball a ton. In 2023, the Cowboys ranked number one in pass attempts. And then in 2024, they were number three in pass attempts, even though Dak Prescott was hurt for half the season. The last time that Schottenheimer called plays back in 2018 through 2020 with the Seahawks, he's more of a run first kind of guy. Number 32, number 24, number 20 in pass attempts. So we'll see. You would think, though, if he's smart, he would lean into the strength of this team, which is now the passing attack, and they wouldn't go out and acquire George Pickens if they didn't have a plan to implement a passing first offense, because they just don't have the horses at running back, you know, like unless you believe in Javonte Williams, I mean, which could also be another good buy. I mean, yeah,
I agree with that. No, I agree with that statement, but I don't believe in Javonte Williams to lean a run heavy offense on.
My point is this team almost assuredly has to pass. I don't think this defense is going to be much improved over last year. They're going to be in a tough division where they're probably going to have to play from behind. All of it to me adds up to, I think CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens are going to have really good seasons, assuming they stay healthy. So I like this a lot. This next one puzzles me a little bit. I'd be interested to hear your rationale, because I'm more of a Michael Pittman guy, and I thought this show was more pro Michael Pittman, but you've chosen Josh Downs here. I don't necessarily hate it, but I like when you look at the ADP, they're very close, Josh Downs and Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman is at wide receiver 49. And Josh Downs is, I'm stalling for time. I don't see him. This is great. Oh, he's wide receiver 44. So they are separated by a couple rounds, which does surprise me a little bit. But talk to me about Josh Downs and why you prefer him over Michael Pittman.
So as a target earner, I believe they are both equal potential in terms of being able to command targets on their offense. We saw that last year with Downs's roughly 26% target share, 19th among receivers, and 30% target rate, targets per route run, which was sixth among receivers. Pure slot guy. And honestly, we love that in this day and age. because PPR, you can call them a scam if you want to, but look, short, easy targets. The Patriots literally created a dynasty off of that. Just short, quick reads. Gain 5 yards a play, you're going to get a first down every single time you move the chains. And that's the type of help that Downs can bring. You look here down at the game log at some of these games. He had 9, 12, 9, 9, 9. 4 games at 9 targets, 1 game at 12 targets in weeks 3 through 9 here in 2024. He has that ability. And why this is happening is because of Pittman's biggest weakness. And that's because he's not a natural separator. Similarly to Drake London, it doesn't mean that I'm not calling him bad by any means. That's just not his game. That's not where he wins. He wins on the boundaries, contested catches, deep balls, red zone. But the key is you have to have a quarterback that's willing to make those throws. And that's why Pittman has struggled with Anthony Richardson and done better with guys like Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan and Phillip Rivers, seasoned veteran quarterbacks who ball placement is never going to be an issue for them, strength maybe, but they're not afraid of throwing a boundary ball or throwing a 50-50 ball. They've done this for too long. Anthony Richardson isn't that guy yet, maybe ever. Daniel Jones isn't really that guy. We saw Wandale Robinson and how many targets he absorbed in New York. And take somebody who's much, much better than Wandale Robinson, no disrespect. And I fully expect he had 107 targets last year in 14 games. If we pace that out with another 21, so 100, he's going to hit 135 targets this year. And if you want to make it, if that's our second bet, then I would welcome that. Because he fits this offense in a better way than Pittman does, and he fits these prospective quarterbacks in a better way than Pittman does.
No, I think you're right. I think you're convincing me because he's also younger too. He's significantly younger.
Matt Harmon convinced me last week, if it helps, or 2 weeks ago.
Okay, and Matt Harmon is definitely somebody I respect. So. Yeah, I you're right about the Richardson stuff. Richardson's just has a better rapport with Josh Downs, and you're right about the separation stuff with Michael Pittman. The one thing I will say is Michael Pittman was playing through a pretty severe back injury last year,
yeah,
and
he should
be a lot healthier this season, but you know, it remains to be seen who the starting quarterback of the Colts is going to be. And if it's Daniel Jones, that's probably better for Pittman. If it's Anthony Richardson, that's probably better for Downs. Although it might not matter either way. You know, with Pittman, you're not taking on that risk, and he's older at this point. So, yeah, the ADP makes sense, and I agree with your point. So you kind of swung me there. Let's move to your next player, which is Geno Smith. We're going back to the quarterback. 34-year-old quarterback with the Raiders. This is an interesting pick. Talk to me about Geno Smith and why you think he's a value.
So we're getting discount Dak here a little bit, and Dak is already a discount to us. And so this is until today, I had never made this thought, this claim. I didn't realize I was a Geno Smith believer at ADP, but he's 34 years old. And ever since his career turnaround, 8th, 20th, and 15th in fantasy points per game from the quarterback position. He just signed a new contract with the new Raiders. He's got Chip Kelly. He's back with Pete Carroll, who he had immense rapport with in Seattle. They have an upgraded, slightly, receiving core. I fully believe in the talent of Jacoby Myers. We'll see what Jack Besh is. Brock Bowers, obviously incredible. And then you have Genty as a support in the run game and for dump offs. So I think this offense is going to take a huge step forward. Again, they're playing in the AFC West. So you're going to have to compete with LA, with Kansas City, with Denver. That's 6 games a year where your offense is going to have to put up points if you want to compete. And historically, I mean, Pete Carroll's offenses have been good. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Chip Kelly's offenses were fairly good as well.
I think so. I think it's when he took over as head coach and they ran that crazy fast-paced offense is when things kind of went with Sam Bradford, I think. I could be wrong about that, but yeah, I think.
Were you being sarcastic? Because I was being sarcastic.
I think
of course Chicago's the offenses been, were good.
Yeah, yeah.
Shady anyway, McCoy, so. Like they, you were having pieces of those, yeah. Of those offenses from Philly back in the day, and it's a really cheap bet to make in a super flex league. And what do we say all the time in super flex leagues? Quarterback is king, and being able to get a starting quarterback for potentially the next 3 years for pretty cheap in dynasty drafts right now, I think is great. I think the new team, the new head coach, the fact that it's Vegas and him being 34 is spelling people away. But I think people got to remember that for these non-mobile quarterbacks, 34 is not that old.
Yeah, no, I for where he's going in the startup and startup drafts right now, I can't. I mean, he's going right next to Travis Etienne for crying out loud. You know, like that is way too low. Even age doesn't matter as much for quarterback. So he's for sure locked in for 2025. The guaranteed money does seem to run out after 2026, but he's not an unrestricted free agent until 2028. So if they're not picking at the top of the draft, which I guess they could be, you know, Geno Smith has a job, you know, even if the Raiders get the number one overall pick and they move on from him, he's going to land somewhere. And he's a top 32 quarterback in this league for sure. So I like that quite a bit. Let's move to a tight end that we both like in Jonnu Smith. So talk to me about potentially why people are still overlooking Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, people are going to see one big fantasy season and the age 29 on that screen. If you're at player profiler, it's 29.8. So he's almost 30, and they're going to get scared away and say, why would I go, you know, for this fluke? But the fact of the matter is it took years and years, but we finally got this hyper athletic freak in the right offense. And we saw what happens when he gets into an offense that knows how to utilize his skill, a McDaniels offense that is very key on spacing, explosive plays. And he went out, they made a stamp by going out and getting Jonnu Smith. And he followed up by putting up 13 fantasy points per game, number five amongst tight ends. He had 111 targets, which was fourth. And really, his role didn't really fully get cemented until maybe week 11, when you look at some of these week over week target numbers. When you go week 12 and on, his targets were 11, 11, 4, 11, 6, 4, 12. And he really started getting peppered with red zone targets starting at about week 9, week 11. That's when his role truly came to form. And that's the type of that it gives me so much confidence going into next year for all the reasons we talked about with Miami, Tyreek Hill being another year older, Jalen Waddle. Yes, we expect him a bounce back from him, but at the same time, there's a realm where that doesn't happen. There's a realm where Jonnu Smith is still relied on to be a big part of this offense. Maybe it's because Tua's injury concerns continue. I'm probably not giving a lot of faith about the Dolphins offense from these arguments that I'm bringing out, but when the players are all on the field, the Dolphins offense is scoring points, and I want parts of that offense. 30 years old is not that big of a deal to me with a tight end that doesn't have immense target history. We got Kittle playing at 31, expecting to play for a few more seasons. We got Kittle going into 36, or sorry, we have Kelsey going into 36. And this is the type of age ceiling, I'll call it, that we have from Jonnu Smith. But really all I care about is that I think he can play two, maybe three more seasons. And he's still at a very cheap cost in terms of the ceiling that he can provide your dynasty team.
I love it. I don't have much more to add, but I do want to talk about this next player, Rashid Shaheed. So the fact that you're mentioning him here as one of your targets means that you must be coming around to Tyler Shuck. Is that right? Or no?
Not necessarily around on Tyler Shuck. I was always okay with taking him where his dynasty ADP ended. Like, you get to the mid third round in a dynasty super flex dynasty startup, you look at some of the picks on the board and you say like, yeah, Tyler Shuck probably should be going right around here. And it makes sense. I think it's more so almost the opposite, because if they're bad, Olave is going to be useless, because Derek Carr couldn't even get that man the ball. And Shahid is he's a twitchy athlete. I'm not going to say he's a gadget, because we really did see him win routes at a very high rate last year, was third overall in route win rate per Player Profiler, sixth in win rate versus man. He performed very highly in Matt Harmon's reception perception as well. He was 14th in dominator rating, 21st in yards per team pass attempt, and 26th in target share. He was getting at first in air yard share as well. Also, he was getting a ton of downfield targets. There is going to be regression on that, because not all of those are going to be converted as a high of a rate as he did last year. But with his ADOT coming down, working more in the short to intermediate area, he just has a more diverse skill set than Olave. He's cheaper than Olave. And I think with almost any other quarterback, or if he didn't get hurt towards the back of the season, that's probably what the value hindrance is the fact that he missed out the last half of the fantasy season. But look what he did before he left: 17, 22, 17, 19, 8. And that was all, again, with a not great offense in New Orleans. They were performing better in the early part of the season than they did in the back half of the season. But if they're going to be down a lot, there's going to be a lot of passing opportunities available. I like Rashid Shaheed's value as somebody who could take a leap in year four, now that he finally has what I'll call a breakout season, even though he didn't get to finish it.
All right. So all of these next suggestions are round 12 or later. So Cedric Tillman, talk to me about Cedric Tillman, why he's a value or a target of yours in a dynasty startup or in trades. So why target the Browns offense here?
Because there's going to be a lot of pass attempts. This team is going to be losing a lot of games, and they're not going to be losing very close games. We saw exactly why we can target the Browns offense last season, because Cedric Tillman, even with amidst of some pretty bad quarterback play across the board, still managed a stretch of 18, 29, 19, and 7 fantasy points per game, or fantasy points, before being knocked out in week 12, what would ultimately be a season-ending injury. But 12 targets, 9 targets, 11, and 8 in that four-week stretch. He showed that he really can operate as that true X receiver in that offense, and Judy is clearly going to be working the slot and underneath. The quarterback play is going to be bad, yes, but they're going to be in heavy deficits just like they were last year. Kevin Stefanski, I believe, historically leans towards the pass, despite, you know, bell cow seasons from Nick Chubb. They are, I believe, they're a generally faster pace of play team. And from that, we have Joe Flacco back, correct? We have Shedeur Sanders. I still believe Shedeur could be serviceable. And by serviceable, I mean like maybe better than DTR, you know, in different ways, maybe as effective as Jameis Winston, maybe less touchdowns, not quite as many pick sixes. So it evens out on the scale. But then the best, you know, the best case scenario, excuse me, is Joe Flacco, who delivered Michael Pittman usable weeks, delivered Josh Downs many usable weeks just last year, was effective with the Browns. And I don't care if he's 45, 55, 65. It seems like as long as Joe Flacco's being alive, he's going to be able to spin it.
I love it. I love this next pick even more. These, if you had to boil down one of my favorite targets, especially in the later rounds, it would be a year two running back.
Yep.
And Jalen Wright has all the juice, but talk to me about Jalen Wright and why he's one of your preferred late round targets. He's currently going in round 15 at the end of round 15 in a super flex startup.
So just absurd value for a guy who's backing up a 5'9", 188 pound running back who just had 281 touches last year. We know historical touch count leads to potential injury risk, and having a guy like Jalen Wright in the 15th round in this high power of an offense, you got to think that they don't want Achane taking up all that, all those touches. The last thing their team needs is another freaking injury. So it's assumed that Jalen Wright's going to work his way in more, and it just the ultimate backup to have. And then round 15, getting that type of contingent upside is not found very often.
Yeah, and I know they added Alexander Mattison, but Jalen Wright, I think, has way more upside than that. And I think he could, if an injury occurs, I think it would be Jalen Wright taking over that role. And that's what kind of what you're, you know, that's the upside, I think, because we know Devon Achane is going to be the guy. So let's talk about on the other side of the spectrum. This is interesting. Austin Ekeler, age 30, going way down in the ADP. So talk to me about why Austin Ekeler is a target of yours.
He was having a sneaky good season up until that concussion knocked him out for a few weeks. But let's look at weeks 9 through 11 here. He got very heavily involved in both phases of the game, had 17, 18, and 18 fantasy points. He had a week with nine targets, 8 receptions, 96 total yards en route to 17 fantasy points without a touchdown. And at the beginning of the year, too, I mean, he's averaging over 10 points per game up until this concussion. He was at one point, and he's had to have been a top 24, top 14 back. I the Fantasy Pros site crashed on me. Maybe I'll be able to get it up before I'm done with this argument. But Ekeler, what did the Commanders do? They took Jacoby Kroski Merritt, and they still have, yep, Brian Robinson, who they really, 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 it seemed like they were just, oh, we have no one else. We have to give it to Brian again. And as a Brian Robinson fantasy manager in several redraft leagues, or several in one or two redraft leagues, I was super disappointed. I thought a lot of these touches that Ekeler was getting that Robinson was going to take and his share was going to increase, his role was going to increase. They didn't do that. They gave it to Ekeler. And I do believe he's only 30. Like, I know he's 30, but it seems like he had a lot of juice left in the tank. And if he's got some of that left, give me him in the 16th round or whatever it is.
18th is according 18th
round. Oh my Lord. Yes, please.
Yeah. 18th round according to Dynasty Data Lab. And this other player is also being taken in round 18, Hunter Henry, tight end for your Patriots. So is this a homer pick? And if so, tell me why you're making it.
It is not a homer pick. It really is just,
we're not adverse to homer picks on this show.
It's just value, you know, scraping. You have a tight end who is going to be in an offense that should be scoring more, and he has historically taken a very large share of the red zone targets of this offense. Most recently last year, 31% of the red zone targets. He was 7th amongst tight ends and targets, 5th seventh in target share, 5th in targets. I'm trying to go through all this so fast today that I've been stumbling. He was also 9th in expected fantasy points per game. So we take that, we expand, no, we don't expand that role, but we keep that role. We expand the offensive production. We take just the slightest step forward. We score some more touchdowns. And he was ranked tight end 15th in fantasy points per game last year, as was he in 2023, as was he in 2021. And he was 10th in 2020 and 26th in 2022. So really one season with the Patriots, he has been outside of the top 15 in fantasy points per game. And he's tight end 18 to 20, somewhere around there in terms of ADP. I just think that's a value at where he's going. And you could have I would love to take a Jonnu Smith and a Hunter Henry and go week by week, you know, with my tight end, if we're not doing premium.
I like it a lot. I mean, he was number 7 amongst tight ends in target share, number 5 amongst tight ends in targets. You know, if you're not getting one of the elite options, this is a perfect guy to get later on to fill that void for you. And he's only 30 for a tight end. That's not that big of a deal. He could play at least a couple more seasons, if not more. Your last player is Will Shipley. And this is another one of those year two sneaky targets. You know, Saquon Barkley had an amazing season last year. And I know it's not fun to say that the guy who propelled you to a fantasy championship potentially is a trap this year, but potentially he is. So tell me why you're drafting or taking a shot on Will Shipley this year.
Again, if you're going to give me a backup running back in a high-powered offense that's backing up a running back, a bell cow running back that just had nearly 300 touches or over 300 touches last year in a dirt cheap round in a dynasty startup, I will take it every time. Just because the injury bug is going to hit somebody. It's statistics. It's life. It's probability. Someone's going to get hurt. And Shipley in week 18, when the starters didn't play, had 10 carries, 4 targets, 4 receptions, 67 total yards, 10.7 fantasy points, was top 24. And in the playoffs against Washington, on just 4 carries, 4 total touches, he had 77 yards and a touchdown, which would have equated to 14 fantasy points. There is upside. He has playmaking ability. He didn't get nearly enough snaps to prove anything, but in those 2 small flashes and some scattered ones throughout the rest of the season, he did show that he had potential. He had a nice run, touchdown run. They got called back at one point in the year, late in the year during the fantasy playoffs. He is very capable of handling the load if Saquon Barkley leaves. And you know how I know that? Because the trusted Kenny Gainwell, no longer in Philly. They saw Will Shipley and said, we do not need to extend Kenny Gainwell. It wouldn't have cost him much. They're a Super Bowl champion. If they thought Kenny Gainwell would have added to the team, they would have kept him around, but they didn't. And it's Will Shipley's turn.
Not only is Saquon coming off of a season where he touched the ball over 370 times, but the previous 2 seasons, he also carried the ball or touched the ball more than 300 times in each of those seasons as well. And he's a running back who is 28 years old. I'm telling you, I get it. Saquon's a special player, but I would be selling him in Dynasty. And I know the Eagles signed A.J. Dillon, but A.J. Dillon has not proven to be a good player. And I think Will Shipley is just a better fit for what they want to do. I could be wrong about that, but I love targeting Will Shipley here, who's a really good pass catching running back.
It would hurt TD upside. In Clemson. It would hurt TD upside. You know, if Saquon were to miss time, AJ Dillon would obviously be like the goal line back, but Philly is not getting a lot of whole running back rushing touchdowns from the 2-yard line. So there's that.
And yeah, tush push. Yeah.
Philly's not a team that's going to be like, oh, our running back's only 5'11", 209. We can't use him in the goal line. They would rather be diverse and put out somebody who, oh, maybe they might run a passing play from the 3-yard line. They might run a wide or a running back screen. And Will Shipley provides the versatility to do that.
Well, we did it. We went through 16 of your targets Superflex startups or trades if you're post startup. So now that we're on the other side of it, any final thoughts, any final words of wisdom for the people as we end the episode?
Yeah. So on Dynasty Data Labs, when it says rookie on the filters for the draft type, it doesn't mean it's a rookie draft. It just means that it includes rookies. So that would be my word to the wise, my advice. Otherwise you're going to create this list and it's going to be a little wonky, but, no, I was glad I was able to kind of get you to come to my side on some of these picks. I think the last thing I have to say, Seth, is we have a promo code now.
Oh,
we have a promo code that we get to push.
We're fancy. Go ahead.
If you're not familiar with Fast Draft, go to the App Store, download it. It is the newest, the freshest best ball format on the streets. you can draft. The goal is to draft as fast as possible so you can get drafts done in 6 to 8 minutes. It's super easy to load it up, and it's cheap, $5 a draft. Go to the App Store, download Fast Draft, use promo code DRT on sign up. That is DRT for Dynasty Roundtable. To get a $50 deposit match up to $50, Fast Draft will match your deposit in promo funds.
I have to get a graphic for that. I'll have to talk to
we should get a script together too. I should instead of me probably just saying whatever.
That information may or may not be sitting in my inbox. So I should probably be a good partner and actually read what was given to me potentially. Sorry, Fast Draft. But yeah, go sign up for Fast Draft. DRT, promo code DRT. Very fun, very up and coming fantasy app for sure. I mean, very fun to participate in those drafts. So I think that's going to do it for us. The next episode will be my 16 players that I'm targeting in trades or in dynasty startups, one for every round. So stay tuned for that. Until next time, nobody cares about Aaron Rodgers, and we will see you later. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great night, morning, afternoon, whatever part of your day it is you are in. Make it a great one, and we will see you later.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.